Welcome back to Plus Minus Gamers Podcast. I'm Tyler.
I'm Nathan, and today we will be talking about what makes a good story in a video game. This is a different conversation from what makes a good video game, because, as we'll discuss later, the story range can vary wildly within games, with some games not even attempting a story, but there are many good games in every category.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so many things that go into what makes a good game. Story is just a small aspect of it, but we want to sit down and just evaluate that prospect, not what makes a good game in whole. So what categories did you kind of come up with as we were thinking about this for this week?
Well, I think we should bring up some games that do minimal story, where they say, okay, we are going to be about the gameplay, but we think it's important to have a story that kind of ties things together. So rather than focusing on the story kind of just happens and you are just having, you know, doing fun missions, or the process of playing the game is tangentially related to the story.
Yeah, gameplay is really the focus more in those games than the story.
Yes, exactly. And then I think we should focus on games that say, okay, you know what? They are equally important, where we are going to have a kick-butt story and we're going to have gameplay that kind of marries the story and the gameplay well, and it makes sense. And then I think the last story, or the last segment, will be more story-oriented games, where they say story is going to be our champion, it's going to be the main focus of our game, and gameplay can be good or, you know, not so good, but if the story is good enough, it'll kind of carry that. And then we'll talk about games that sort of fail in each of those categories.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, let's just start off with games where story really isn't the main focus. There's a famous quote out there by John Carmack, who was the lead programmer on Doom, the original Doom games from id Software. As this podcast is family friendly, I'm not going to repeat it, but
I know the quote. Yes.
But it's pretty much, you know, gameplay, or, you know, video games should be about the gameplay, not so much the story. I think back in the 90s, that was absolutely true, back when, you know, everything was pixelated and we're not in the same space that we are today. But, you know, we still see games that come out right now that the focus is more on the gameplay than the story.
Exactly.
The first one that comes to mind, in my opinion, is Minecraft. There is literally no story in Minecraft. There's a small bit of text after you beat the Ender Dragon, but that game is solely focused on gameplay.
Exactly.
And it's a great game. It doesn't mean that, you know, the game's still great, but there's no story at all. Or, you know, there's other games that story exists, but gameplay is really the key focus. And I think another example, Hades, I think, is a good example, or any kind of that style of game, the, you know, bullet hell, dungeon crawler type games. Really, the story's there in the background to keep you going, but the gameplay is really the key aspect in those games.
Yeah, so Hades, I might disagree with you on that one, simply because of the fact that for people who aren't as good at bullet hells, there is even a mode where you can just focus on the story. But we'll get back to that one. Okay. Yeah, I went hardcore into Hades, but we'll bring that one up in a little while. And I believe that quote, the intention of it was to say, you know, people expect that story should be in a game, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the focus. And
definitely,
I think that quote is right as far as it doesn't have to be the focus, but a lot of, especially indie games, have come out lately that pretty much push the docket on saying, you know what, this can be a piece of art that essentially is just essentially a movie that you play, and it's all about the story, and you'll get connected with the characters, and
definitely, yeah, there's tons of games that are out there that are just about the story, and more so the focus, like you said, on the game being a form of art than a game.
Exactly. So I'll kick us off. You said Minecraft, for a game that pretty much has little to no story, but it's still a good game. I would say, along that same vein, Spelunky. Did you ever play that one? It's like a
Dungeon
crawler game. Or I guess it's more of a platformer, but you just die over and over again. There's a bit of a story, and the second Splunky game has a little bit of a story, but it's more or less just a reason to theme the game in a specific way.
Yeah.
And it turns out really good. In my opinion, Splunky doesn't try to be what it's not. It doesn't try to pretend that when you achieve things, it's for the purpose of the story. It's mm-hmm. more just gameplay focused, and they plug it back into the story. To me, it's similar to, I'll say, like Super Meat Boy or something, where it's your classic damsel in distress, but it more just gives you a reason for the sort of left to right platforming.
Gives you like motivation Mario. For the gameplay.
Exactly. You know,
there's a purpose behind the actions that you're taking.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Some other good ones, I'd say, like Faster Than Light, FTL.
Yeah, love that game. Fantastic game. Great game.
Probably one of my favorite strategy games of all time. And the story, it's a bit of a strange one, because usually when you have like text adventure type games, story is important.
Yeah.
But for FTL, it's more of each run is important. You kind of get connected to your players, and rather than playing for the overall story, you sort of adopt a persona for what you're going to do for that run, whether you're going to be evil or whether you're going to take care of the citizens you see or decide to rob them. The overall story is pretty simple. It's sort of, you know, you're part of the empire, essentially. You're running away from some rebels who are going to come destroy the empire, and you got to let them know quickly.
A little bit of a reverse Star Wars type deal.
Exactly, yes. And it's quite fun when you look at it that way.
I think that's more so like the story's there to explain the gameplay. You know, the gameplay is obviously the focus, the encounters, the, you know, dialogue options are definitely the main way that you engage with the game. And that was the intent. But, you know, there's a reason why you need to keep moving sector to sector, why you need to keep upgrading, why the, you know, enemies get harder and harder as you go through the game. And it like you said, you know, it's there, but really you don't deal with much of the story. It just explains why you're playing the game the way that you are.
Exactly. So I'll kind of take us into our next category here. And that to me is the games where they say, you know what, story is almost equally as important as gameplay. And they still have quite good of gameplay, but they are heavily story focused as well. They're not like a primarily story game, but they are all about that story. To me, kind of the most classic one that probably most people have played would be, I would say, any of the 3D Zelda franchise games.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree.
The one that comes to mind, of course, is Ocarina of Time. Most Nintendo people, it's like their favorite game ever. And absolutely. I'm one of those people.
Yep.
But you've even got like Majora's Mask, Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, all those ones. Essentially, it's good gameplay, but a story narrative that really drives your gameplay and makes you invested in why you're in each dungeon.
Yeah, I think games in this category tend to be more linear with the gameplay. You know, there's not as much free reign about what you do. You know, obviously, like, you know, we'll keep using Ocarina of Time as an example, right? Like, you can more or less visit the dungeons in kind of any order that you want. But, you know, when you get there, like, the story is very linear. You can't kind of do whatever you want with it. It's not as free. And so the story is guiding, you know, it's not there to tell you why you're playing the game. It is guiding it's guiding the gameplay more. I'm thinking of it more as games in this category, kind of like a bowling lane with bumpers up. You know, you can kind of, you have some wiggle room for freedom to do what you want to do, but really you're being guided towards the end goal, which is, you know, the climactic fight against Ganon in Ocarina of Time or whatever it may be for your game. You know, it's guiding you towards this end point in the story. And I think that's very characteristic of this game, of this category of
I agree. Stories. It's not quite as structured as, say, a shooting game like Halo or like a Call of Duty franchise game, which those the quality of story varies wildly. But with those games, it's more of you have a mission, the mission adds to the story, and then you go to the next mission, rather than one of these games where you're continuously playing. Mm-hmm. And once you find the right spot and once you complete the right puzzles, then you've added to the story by getting a new item that allows you to progress. It's sort of like the to me, it's similar to the Metroidvania type of story play.
I was going to bring up Hollow Knight in this category because it's very much the same kind of sense of, you know, there is a story to follow. And while Hollow Knight's story is a little bit more vague, especially the lore, you know, you kind of need to watch some YouTube videos to get a better understanding of the Hollow Knight lore. The story is more so told through, you know, reaching your objective of, you know, killing different bosses, completely exploring an area. And I think Hollow Knight does a very good job of being in this category, because if you think of the story in that game as more of, okay, my goal is to explore this area, well, you know, okay, you're kind of cut off from exploring certain areas until you get the Mantis Claw to do wall jumps, or the Mothwing Cloak to do a double jump. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the story there is a little bit unique, and I mean, you can expect that from an indie game title like Hollow Knight. Of course. But it's the same kind of thing where you're kind of guided in a certain direction. You know, you have some freedom to maneuver and check out some different areas, but a lot of the game is locked off until you get these items to start doing, you know, exploring more of the area, killing more bosses and such.
Yes. And then I'd like to add one more game to this category as well. Just because some of them are mission oriented, others are more continuous gameplay. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a game you and I actually played together at one point. Shovel Knight, another one of my favorite indie games.
Yeah, Shovel Knight's fantastic.
Where it does what's been done before, but it does it so well that it makes you care about every character you meet. It's not like Mario, where Toad is just someone at the end of each mission that you see that says your princess is in another castle. You know what I mean? It really brings you into the story in a way that doesn't feel forced. And it really improves on the old like you know, Mega Man, Mario type formula.
It's building off of what like the platformers of the 80s and 90s laid out of, you know, it's still got those, graphics are, you know, same vein, you know, the story's the same vein, you know, you have a damsel in distress that you need to go rescue by clearing these various levels, but there's so much more that builds on top of that. You know, you meet all these characters through the various towns that you go through, and there's a lot more, the story plays a lot more in it other than get to the end of the level and hope that Princess Peach is there. It's okay, I need to clear these areas, you know, defeat these bosses to get to the next section, which might have the, you know, Shield Knight for, you know, Shovel Knight's purposes, same exactly in that story. And you know, I care more about what's going on in the game than I do with like a classic Mario title. With a classic Mario title, it's just there's nothing really going on behind my eyes when I'm playing those games. It's just the muscle reflex of, you know, clearing the platformer level. Whereas with Shovel Knight, there's a lot more that I want to do in the game. I'm a lot more invested and more engaged with the game as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And even looking for secrets and things to get money so that you can get more items in that game, it kind of helps the world come alive a little bit more, which to me, that gameplay mechanic adds more to the story because it gets you invested.
Yeah, well, and that's part of, you know, what makes a good story too. You know, like a story isn't just narrative. There is, you know, how you interact with the world is part of the story. Because like you said, you know, wanting to find those secrets to unlock new armor and stuff, that's, you know, while that's not necessarily narrative, that's still part of, you know, how you engage with the game beyond just gameplay. You know, it's driving how you're playing the game, which is what a lot of story is intended to do.
I agree with that. And I'll take us into our last category. I have a big list of what makes a good story in games that we can get into. And then after that, we can talk about kind of the bad games, but I'm going to bring up some of the games that say, you know what, story is going to be so important that it's almost going to trump gameplay, or in some cases it does. And to me, one of the games that came out, it was a while back now, I guess. But it really kind of set the tone of, hey, you can have a game that is all about story that will just suck people in completely. And that is the indie game Undertale.
Yeah.
I mean, it blew up on the internet. Anyone who would listen to this podcast has probably heard of Undertale before.
Definitely.
If not played it themselves. But it was essentially completely story-driven. There was almost nothing about the game that wasn't about the story. The gameplay was pretty simple, almost like a little bullet hell and RPG. But it wasn't about the gameplay. It was completely about getting to know the characters, deciding who you were going to be, and then making that story happen.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think, you know, I brought up last week how... I brought up last week how I was playing through the Guardians of the Galaxy game, the Marvel Guardians of the Galaxy game. And I finished it. And that game is in this category as well, where really, you know, there's some like brawler moments where you're fighting in an arena, but really you're progressing through the level for the story. Everything is very story driven, lots of cutscenes. And I still very much enjoyed that game. While the, you know, the gameplay did get kind of repetitive, the puzzles a little repetitive, the story was compelling enough to keep me going and enjoying it. And another, you know, group in this category would be all of the Telltale games that have come out. You know, there's some games that really just exist for you to have small interactions, but really to experience the story. And I think it's coming from this idea that video games can be a whole nother medium for, you know, how we absorb entertainment beyond, you know, gameplay. Because we have, you know, they tried to kind of blend it into movies. I've heard this talked about and more so talked about in the early to mid 2010s, but of, you know, interactive movies where, you know, the audience selects, you know, what the, you know, characters do and that affects the movie. Well, that's essentially these Telltale games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your decisions affect this like branching story, and it's like one of those old choose your own adventure books.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not even about the gameplay in the slightest.
No.
A couple other games that I'll like to rapid fire out there. I'd say Knights of the Old Republic is very similar to me for this, where it's about the story. It's about creating that narrative of what's happening rather than the gameplay itself. And then there's another game like BioShock, where even though the gameplay in itself is a lot of fun, the story and specifically the twist at the ending is what makes you remember the game. It's not the gameplay. It's that moment where you go, oh my gosh, what I've been doing this whole time has been for a reason other than what I thought I was doing.
Yeah.
And I will bring up Hades here because I think... that Hades is a very special roguelite bullet hell type game. I mean, you're going in, you're getting these boons or upgrades as you're playing, and then you die. But every time you die, you come back and you get a new bit of information. You get to grow a relationship with the character a bit stronger. Yeah, and it makes it so it's not as big a deal when you get killed by the first boss for the third time in a row. Or if you get really far and then the very next run you get your butt smashed, because you get to learn things about the characters, and depending on how well you do, you could almost skip the story entirely, but it kind of leads to that difficulty of progression and the difficulty curve of the dungeons by building on the story that the main character, Zagreus, is a part of, where he gets to learn things about his father, learn things about his mother. And when you start the game, it's like your father, Hades, is the bad guy. But by the end, you have like a mutual respect for him, even though he is the final boss. And it just really is well-crafted in my mind. And so even though I adore the gameplay of Hades and have played far too many hours of the game, I think that what I remember most about it is those story minute moments. Outside of the random crazy build, building the relationships to me was the coolest part of that game.
Yeah. I think that it all depends on how you play that. And I mean, that's where, you know, indie games are kind of breaking out of these molds of typical categories that we've had for any aspect of gaming in the past where, you know, I think Hades, depending on how you play it, can be considered either, you know, story isn't really that big because you're just playing through, you're not talking to the characters, you're just jumping back in every time, or, you know, you can play it whereas story is really what you're playing it for, and exploring the various levels of the dungeons and fighting the bosses and stuff is just secondary. You know, you're not really caring about your progress there. You're caring more about your progress and interacting with the characters.
I agree. I think that's what makes Hades such a masterpiece, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic game.
It's great. I would agree that, you know, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic is definitely in this category. I think any games that really are primarily RPGs, just inherently fall into this category of gameplay is the most important, whether, you know, the percentage of focus on it, whether it's, you know, 60% story, 40% gameplay, or, you know, all the way up to 90% story, 10% gameplay, it all kind of varies. But I think any RPG inherently falls into this category because it is wanting you to fall into this role of the character and, you know, follow this story out the way that it's been scripted by the team, that by the developers. So I think any RPG inherently falls into this category.
Yes.
I would say, though, I would argue with you on the BioShock. I think BioShock is more the middle ground category because, while, don't get me wrong, the gameplay is good and the story is good, I think that they are designed to intertwine a little bit better because it's more so like what we talked about with that middle category where the gameplay is, you know, the story is guiding your actions, but, you know, you have some freedom within that guidance. I think it's more so, you have continuous play, you know, there's not these major breaks, except for, you know, in important storyline instances. You know, it's relatively continuous and streamlined gameplay. So I would contend that BioShock's middle ground, but that's a great part about video games. Everyone can have a different opinion and a different experience with games. And
exactly, some people can be more wrong than others, but in the end of the day, you know, we all love games for the same reason. They entertain us.
Absolutely.
So before we get into the I'll just say the fails, and I love some of these games, so don't tear me too bad, but I'm going to talk about what really gets games elevates game stories to the next level, and those elements that can't really be missing from story. And definitely, for me, the number one most important thing is you've got to get your point across. Like, if you want to be a space adventure where you're being pursued by a scary threat that slowly gets bigger and badder, it has to accomplish that goal. Like, that's FTL, and it does well. It doesn't try to be anything fancy, but it
needs to be established early, too. You know, if you're going to, like you said, like it has to be set up, right? You have to have a clear understanding of the story. I think it needs to be set up early. You don't need all of the story elements, but like you said, like, okay, space adventure. Okay, we're going to start off in outer space. We're being chased by this big bad. Okay, here is the threat. Here is, it's looming. It is, you know, coming up. You know, this is how we got to, you know, we got to get away from this. I think another great example of this, and it just happens to be, you know, space adventure-y, is Knights of the Old Republic. You know, you start off just you wake up and your ship's being attacked by, you know, it is clearly described enemy. They are fighting you. You need to get away because they are going to kick your hiney. Okay, introductory done. We're going to the first planet. And you understand the purpose of the story, you know, who the good guys are, who the bad guys are, and what your role is as your character. Are you a bad guy, you know, or you know, are you the, you know, as the protagonist, you don't always have to be the good guy. There's plenty of games where you play as the villain. But you know, what's your role within this story, within this narrative? And, you know, how are you going to go about accomplishing it? Are you going to, you know, if you're set up to be the classic hero, are you going to play it as a good guy hero? Or are you going to play it as this dude who, has way too much power and, you know, does whatever he wants.
Exactly.
So there's,
a lot of it is how into it you can get as well. But, you know, like you said, as long as it's making sure that you understand what the defined goal is, then you can make your decisions from there. But if you can't get the idea across of what needs to be going on and why it's happening, then you've already lost your audience. And I think that that's almost necessary for every single game. Even if it's a game that's not story driven, or even if it's a minimal story game, if you don't know why you're there, or if you can't figure it out, it doesn't work except for very rare circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, writing a movie or a book. You know, you have to hook your audience in early in order to keep them engaged throughout the whole thing. You know, at the end of the day, it's any form of writing, whether writing a story, whether it be book, movie, TV show, whatever it is, you need to get your audience hooked in early on, and so that way they have an understanding of why they want to remain engaged with the content.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I think ties into this is that the missions or what you're doing has to tie into the overall story. And I guess I'll just bring it up right now. Assassin's Creed used to be one of my favorite games to play. But as the series went on, it became just a complete train wreck, in my opinion, of story.
So where's that cutoff point for you? Is it like when they converted to the more open worldy type thing with like Assassin's Creed Origins? I mean, I'd even argue Assassin's Creed Black Flag kind of bleeds into that. But for me, my cutoff point is, you know, you have everything before Origins and then everything after Origins.
It would be very similar to that for me. But to me, it was a lack of awareness of when to drop the future plot. And just say, you know what, we're making these games because they're fun. Because they started to cram in, okay, you know, the first story is self-contained, more or less. But then it's like, okay, these Templars have been around forever, actually. Across all human time. And, you know, they made it far more complicated than it needed to be. Because no one plays Assassin's Creed because they care about the space aliens who gave the apple gift of mankind. Eden to, yes, the apple of Eden, exactly.
The original humans. Yeah, they,
you know, they play it because they want to jump off a building and stab characters. Someone in the face. Exactly. You know, I've never once sat there and been like, wow, would Ezio actually do this? It's like, no, but I can dive off a building and stab someone and then throw his weapon at someone else and then dive into a bush and run away. Like, that's fun. But to me, what I'm playing doesn't actually translate to what's happening as far as the story goes. As far as the story goes, you're plugged into the Matrix. Like, it doesn't to me, it gets so convoluted so fast. But
yeah, it kind of runs two storylines at the same time, and you're really kind of supposed to more care about that future storyline, or I guess it's technically the present, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Where you're playing as Desmond and, you know, you're working with Abstergo to unlock your genetic memories and whatnot. But really the gameplay all takes place in the past, where you're playing as Ezio or Altair or whoever it may be. And I think that kind of, and we can come back to this point, but I think for me, that's a good segue into my opinion on what makes a good story in video games, which is it has to tie into the gameplay. If there's no integration into the gameplay and you don't feel like what you're doing is driving the narrative and has a purpose, then it just becomes really mindless.
I agree. And, do you have a game example for that?
Absolutely. I have a game example where it doesn't work.
Yes.
So I don't know. Have you ever played any of the Far Cry games?
I did at a friend's house ages ago, but I mostly know it for watching some of the story elements, and I have watched different playthroughs of the game. So I'm familiar with it, even though I have not had the pleasure of playing it myself very much.
So I sat down and tried to play Far Cry 5 a little while ago, just because it was on the Xbox Game Pass. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll try it out. And originally the story really had me like hook, line, and sinker, man. Like the story of Far Cry 5 is you are this police, some sort of like law enforcement agent, and you and a couple of other agents are going to go arrest this cult leader who is basically David Koresh in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got these, you know, he cult mindset type thing. He's got all these people following him, willing to do whatever he wants. They're stockpiling guns, and you need to go and arrest this guy. And they end up, you know, fighting you. Your helicopter crashes as you're trying to, you know, arrest the guy. And it's your job to basically rid this county in Montana of these cult leaders. And the main gameplay is, okay, you need to, there's three distinct regions. You need to go take out like these, you know, cult leaders, lieutenants. And once you kill all three of them, then you'll be able to take on the cult leader. But what really kind of lost me was once you get into these three regions, all you're doing is you're just basically repeating the same thing to build up essentially a wanted level until the lieutenant starts to come after you.
Oh,
so it's just, it gets really boring after, you know, you blow up a silo, you know, kill all the leaders or all the cult members in a compound and, you know, do some missions for some characters and that's it. You know, it got really boring really fast because the gameplay was just the same thing over and over again. And it was just mindlessly doing the same thing. It didn't really have, while it did have like technically an impact on the story, I didn't feel like it was impacting the story. I felt like
exactly.
I was just
to me is something so important, is you've got to feel tension as the player. Like you have mm-hmm. to say, okay, what I'm doing is critical now. And what I'm doing mm-hmm. is important now, because it helps you buy into the fact that you are driving the story with what you're doing. But if it's a very repetitive thing, you are pulled out completely.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
Yeah. I will say that like there's an example, like games that do this well, and I don't want this to just be us raving about Ocarina of Time the whole podcast.
Okay, yeah.
But you know, this is my last time that I'm going to go back to it. Like while the gameplay is like the same actions, each dungeon feels unique and it has me drawn in, because it's not just repeating the same thing. It's okay, there's a purpose behind me completing this dungeon that advances the story, and each dungeon is unique enough that I feel like I'm doing something within this like chapter of the story that that's having an impact.
I agree.
So, you know, having, you know, if you're going to have the same gameplay be going on, you have to at least have it be driving the story. Or like going back to BioShock, right? While the gameplay is, you know, shoot the guys, then that's really it. You know, yeah. you're progressing through the story that you feel an impact when you are playing the game, and you feel like, okay, these guys are preventing me from progressing to the next story point, or, you know, killing these guys is important to me advancing the story.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that. I guess I'll bring up kind of the elephant in the room for me, because I never like to say that the story in this game is bad, but it's bad. That said, it's like probably one of my favorite, it is one of my favorite games of all time, and probably everyone's favorite game of all time, Skyrim.
Yeah,
the game itself is fantastic, and the reason so much of it works is because each time you play, you make your own story. Whether you're some sort of Time Lord who just got his powers taken away and you're gonna bust the game beyond recognition, or you are just some peasant who has decided to forsake the world and kill all the guards everywhere and get the biggest bounties you can, you can create a really fun story on your own that's better than the overall story. Because maybe it's the fact that we've all played through the game so many times, but the overall story is not compelling to me.
Yeah, I think the main quest in Skyrim to, you know, kill Alduin and, you know, rid the age of dragons destroying everybody.
Yeah. Really fulfill your destiny as the Dragonborn.
Yeah, that doesn't drive me in Skyrim. What drives me is, you know, like you said, like creating my own narrative, building my character, getting the best gear that I want. I will say though, like while the main quest line, the main story isn't very compelling to either of us, I think there's side quests that have very compelling stories.
They are. They're very good self-contained adventures. And I adore some of them. And even there's specific dungeons that almost tell a story without even having characters. The one that specifically comes to my mind. I know you do go for Dark Brotherhood pretty much every single time you play.
Just about every single time I play a stealth archer, and that's how you get good armor for stealth archer builds.
This is true.
Yeah, the story is very, very good. I've played through a lot of Skyrim, and it's still one of my favorite side quests in terms of its narrative.
Yeah, within that, there is a dungeon that you go into. It's a Dwemer ruin where you have to kill someone who's sitting around a campfire right at the beginning of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you continue down the pathway of that ruin, you learn things, and it really kind of tells its own story in a very fantastic way. Like, you start going in there and you see these Dwemer robots, but as you start going further down this really huge dungeon, you realize that, wait a second, there are destroyed robots everywhere. Why aren't there robots in these areas? And then you start to see Falmer, and you start to see, you know, human skulls, and you start to realize, oh my gosh, there is a underground society of like blind monstrous creatures that are at like an eternal war with the Dwemer. And they must have won at some point, since there are no dwarves in Skyrim, but their tech is still doing what it's supposed to do, which is executing these monsters. And you get down to the very bottom, and there's this massive room with a huge door. But the Falmer have like jammed gears with bones, and it's pretty exhilarating when you're kind of sneaking around there or kind of going in guns blazing, and you're like, why have they sabotaged this machinery? You go pull all that stuff out, and then this door drops to have a giant Dwemer sentry just come out and start kicking your butt. And you start to realize, oh my gosh, like they have like, they're essentially trapped in here. Like, they can't leave because they can't go outside. But the way they want to go is trapped by this giant robot guard. And so they are smart enough to block it. And to me, that's the way that Skyrim succeeds. Because each dungeon, even though you have the same enemies, and certain ones do get repetitive. Like, I've killed so many Draugr that my brain doesn't even register that they're a Draugr anymore. But you basically can have fun with each dungeon. Like, the first time you go into it, you're like, wow, either there's a character right at the beginning, or you can hear the people talking about, wait, there's someone further down below, or you can, you know, reference previous dungeons and bring in gear and get a better story.
I think that's there's an actual term for it. I forget what it is, but it's basically, you know, you learn and the story is revealed to you through your experience in the game. You know, it's not just you get to this point and, you know, the NPCs pull you aside and have a dialogue moment. It's as you're playing, you come across something visually and you're like, huh, why are these bones jammed into these gears? Like, why is this stopped up?
You infer the story. That's entirely what Hollow Knight is based on, you know?
Yeah, and I like those, and I think those are getting a little bit more popularity as we're kind of shifting away from the cookie cutter mold of, you know, what we classically think of as games, that, you know, these AAA games. But we're getting more to a point where developers trust us as the player to be able to figure out the story as we're going, and they don't need to spoon feed us. Yeah. I think that's something that for a lot of people who play video games who are in their, you know, 20s, 30s, basically anybody who has been playing video games for at least a decade, is really excited about and want to happen, because like when a game handholds you through the story, it's so irritating and it's so boring, and it just loses us a lot when we want to learn through doing and, you know, get that experience like that, you know, have the developers trust us.
All right. So speaking of handholding, I'm going to bring up a video game franchise that you might've heard of called Pokemon.
Gotta catch them all.
You gotta catch them all. Exactly. And I'm going to bring up the point that just because a game has a story that has worked in the past, you have to innovate enough that it's still fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess you and I, our favorite game is Gen 4 Platinum.
Yep.
Because it has a very high impact story, and that's more or less the first Pokemon game that got us hooked.
Yeah.
However, I don't think Gen 4 was innovative enough to say it has a great story because all the other games came first.
Yeah. And
in that vein, I'd say all of the Pokemon games, other than Gen 1, have a bad story just because they have not changed a single thing formulaically since Gen 1.
I completely agree. And I think a lot of it is because, you know, let's think about why Pokemon was so big when it first blew up in the late 90s. You know, everybody wanted to catch them all. You know, it wasn't where, you know, catching them all was felt like a chore and a side thing that you did in the game. That was all anyone cared to do, because when Gen 1 came out, when, you know, Red and Blue first came out, there was no story. It was just, here's your, you know, here's your Charmander, Squirtle, Bulbasaur, go, you know, yeah, do whatever you want. Go catch them
and be the best.
Exactly. And so there was a lot of freedom there where, you know, when I first started playing Pokemon as a kid, I cared about, you know, okay, hey, I want to find out where all these Pokemon are, you know, which one's the strongest, and learning it all on my own through doing, like I said, yeah, you know, figuring out as I went. And I think the Pokemon Company and Game Freak, you know, I don't know if it's they never realized that or what the case is, but they've started to lean more and more on, okay, we need to have this story. We need to be, you know, story focused more so than anything else. Whereas really, you know, the story that, or what compelled us was the gameplay, that the gameplay loop of, you know, exploring an area, finding what Pokemon are there, catching them, training mm-hmm. them up and battling. And, you know, on the playground, you know, okay, hey, whoa, where'd you get that Pokemon? I didn't even know that existed. You know, let me mm-hmm. go explore this on my own. And,
or picking a Pokemon and being like, does this thing evolve? Like, is it worth getting yeah. rid of one of the ones that I care about in order that you might become powerful one day? And it's kind of this, I don't know, this tension that's really fun to me. Even still, it's fun to go through and yeah. be like, all right, am I going to replace different party members with others? But back to the hand-holding thing that I said, mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. that even if the new Pokemon games, I'm going to keep Legends Arceus out of this one, because yeah. I don't think it's technically considered a mainline game.
It's
still kind of new enough that people are trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
I was a fan of it, but sorry. Anyway, the Pokemon games, specifically Sun and Moon, to me, it was like, all right, we've got a problem. We have a major problem. You aren't letting me explore. You aren't letting me go into any areas that I'm not allowed to go into. And you're over explaining everything to me. Like, when Pokemon was just barely hanging on and staying interesting enough based on the fact that you could at least create some sort of difficulty for yourself mm-hmm. based on not grinding and stuff, it got rid of all of that.
Yeah.
You get handed things, you can instantly level up Pokemon with like candies and stuff.
The game doesn't allow you to progress unless you prove that you can beat this next, you know, boss or story element. Yeah.
Yeah, and it also, like, you know, the shared XP and all that stuff, mm-hmm. it all crescendos into a big mess for me, which removes the only engaging gameplay part that I enjoyed and shows the glaring issues with the story, which to me, the issue is that pretty much the impact of the conflict, the central conflict and the goal, there was nothing. There was no, like, thing I'm working towards that I care about. It was yeah. pretty much, you know.
Well, I think
the reason I played it was because I care about Pokemon.
Yeah. I think this kind of goes back to, you know, we can add on to, you know, list of what makes a good story, I think there has to be the ability to fail, you know, maybe not fail the main story, but, you know, fail in certain aspects. And, you know, while the gameplay, you know, the story and narrative might require you to win and, you know, you have to reset, you know, do another fight again, you know, reset a checkpoint, re-clear a level, whatever it may be, you know, the game can't sit down and say, hey, we're going to give you this illusion of the ability to fail, but in reality, we're not going to let you fail at all. You know, you're going to complete this no matter what, and there's really not going to be any difficulty there. And I think that's important to a good story is, you know, you have to be able to, the gameplay has to allow you to fail in achieving your goals. So that way you are motivated to achieve that both through wanting to succeed in the gameplay and wanting to succeed in the narrative.
I agree with that. Yes. Failure state, to me, it's a pretty lenient thing where failure can be anything from, okay, I'm stuck, so I quit, or I have died and have to completely restart what I'm doing. But you have to have that sort of tension. However, I don't necessarily know if it ties into the gameplay as much, or like if it ties into the story as much as it does gameplay.
I think it can be equally, you know, tied in, you know, like with this Pokemon example, right? You're never going to fail the story, right? There's never going to be a failure state within the story that you can go down. But, you know, you can fail in in this instance, the hand holding prevents you from failing in the gameplay.
I agree.
But you need to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's going down a rabbit hole of what makes good gameplay. But I do think in a story, you know, you have to have a fear of failure.
Yes, I agree. And part of that is you got to care about what's happening enough to care if it fails. Let's see what else. I guess for me, that would be Halo 4, where you just stop caring. I loved the multiplayer of Halo 4 only because I played it so much and it was something that my family could play together.
Yeah, it's more for the nostalgia aspect of the time that you spent in the game.
Exactly. But the story itself was a hot mess.
It was so bad.
A boss, like a final boss that was literally a quick time event, to just jumbled missions that pretty much it was like, okay, shoot the thing. And the gameplay itself wasn't even that great. Like, it lost the impact that Halo used to have of guns and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it had me so far removed from the gameplay itself had me so far removed from the story that I just stopped caring completely. And I can't remember if that's the game where, like, Cortana tries to be evil or something, but
that's the one later game. You know, spoilers, Cortana dies at the end is Halo 4.
Right.
Halo 5 is Halo 5's story is just weird and you don't understand it at all through any of it. It's basically like you're playing a Spartan team that is chasing down Master Chief and Master Chief is trying to like revive Cortana. But it's all weird. Halo Infinite, which came out, I believe, this year, 2022.
Yeah.
Either this year or end of 2021. That one, the story of it is Cortana is evil, more or less. Like that's the overarching
story,
is that Cortana is evil in that one.
Yep. They were both very forgettable regardless, but pretty much it removed me from Halo, which made me sad. But I mean, other than that, it's pretty much up to the developer what their story looks like. And as long as it connects with the audience, I think it succeeds.
That's where I think, you know, indie games really have an advantage is because, you know, they can go on social media or have like Kickstarters and get to interact with the individuals who are going to play their game and not necessarily get to know them on a personal level, but get a general understanding of interest, the way that these people, you know, these groups of people think and whatnot, and be able to, you know, develop their story around that. So that way they already know these, you know, what is going to engage their audience compared to a AAA game, which, you know, let's be real, the most that they connect with, a lot of AAA games connect with their audiences when people are complaining and exactly. their social media team is needing to say, I'm sorry that you're having this issue.
Mm-hmm. Patch coming soon, or we are aware of this issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no one really on the development staff that are like, okay, let's look at our target audience, our target demographic. What are they enjoying about the, you know, this mm-hmm. video game space right now? You know,
I mean, it's the classic too many cooks in a kitchen scenario, mm-hmm. right? You can't mm-hmm. please everybody, but when you try to please everybody and when you have, you know, higher ups yeah. and corporations and a huge team of game developers and tons of story directors who are all trying to find something that they think fits their agenda and the current atmosphere of games and try to find the most middle ground non-offensive game that you can think of, it drops yeah. dead every time, in my opinion. And that's why indie games have such a good advantage, because they're like passionate and they mm-hmm. care so much about crafting a game that makes people feel a certain way, whether it's terrified or just, you know, a big silly grin on your face the whole time that you're slashing up demons or whatever.
Yeah, I think another thing that has to be considered when we're talking about this kind of thing is, you know, I think there's a lot of game series that really, you know, just need to die. You know, they need to stop making games yes. in the series, because it's just getting to a point where they are beyond scraping the bottom of the barrel. I think, you know, Call of Duty is one of those franchises where, yes, everybody loves a good FPS. We haven't had a good FPS come out of the Call of Duty series in forever. Mm-hmm. You know,
I couldn't even tell you what the last three games were that came out.
Yeah, they remade, you know, Modern Warfare, and the Modern Warfare remake that came out, I think, in at the end of, I think, 2019. That one was halfway decent, but, you know, generally that one's all been bad. As much as, you know, you and I love Pokemon, I legitimately think it's time for Pokemon to die. I think it's time for Pokemon, for them to stop making new games.
I think so, too. And part of that is you've created characters that people love, mm-hmm. so you got to stop doing the exact same thing with them. Like,
yeah,
I think we had talked about Super Auto Pets, how they need mm-hmm. to adopt a new formula where they can say, all right, you know these concepts, you know these characters, and you fell in love with our story ages ago, so let us kind of reward you for that by giving you a game that breaks the mold in one way or another. But, mm-hmm. You know, like Call of Duty, like Pokemon, like, you know, fighting games and that kind of stuff, you have to innovate, or you have to come up with something new. Like, you have to either do something that no one has done before story-wise to keep them playing the exact same gameplay, or mm-hmm. you have to come up with new gameplay to get them to care about the stories that they once did.
I totally agree. I think that is, you know, why Pokemon Legends Arceus was so well-received by a lot of Pokemon fans, is because it was completely new. You know, while it was same idea for gameplay, you know, catch Pokemon, battle some bosses and whatnot, the way that you went about exploring and doing all of these things was so new and innovative that it really, you know, brought a lot of people back. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you more so than I, but, you know, we've both kind of been on the brink of, like, at what point do we just stop buying new Pokemon games? Cause there's nothing different. There's nothing changing, and it's just repeating exactly what they're doing and going in the wrong direction. Our Legends Arceus was the exact opposite of that. It was the change that the series needed to kind of be reinvigorating.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think part of it, too, is they make it easy. they're saying, here is our youngest audience. We have to make it so that this game can be completed and, like, 100%ed by our youngest audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it so that there's no challenge. And they have certain things locked behind doors that, even though you know you could get past them if it was like a real life scenario, it's artificially stopped because of X, Y, or Z. And so that's why I think Tyler and I had talked about that pretty much Pokemon Scarlet and Violet is going to be like our ride or die one, where we will give it a try. We'll give it the good old college try. And if it lets us down, we're pretty much done with Pokemon, and we'll just fight each other in Showdown until the day we die. Because that's, you know, that's what we care about.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually fully prepared to not buy Scarlet or Violet Gen 9 until, you know, they released some new information of, like, it is going to be completely open world. You can explore however you want, do whatever you want. And, you know, it's completely... you can play it completely co-op online. And I think that was a big lure for me, because I'm like, okay, I can fully explore this new Pokemon world with Nathan completely, and we can do it from, you know, we don't live near each other, so we can't, you know, sit down and play it on a couch together. But what we can do is, you know, do all this crazy stuff that we want to and have been wanting to do since, you know, we were kids. Mm-hmm. With older Pokemon games, we can do now. So it did bring me back in with these, what they're, you know, claiming to be are these innovations and changes in the formula that we talked about they've been needing to do. And, you know, if they succeed with those, then, you know, I might be willing to stick around for Gen 9 or Gen 10.
Yeah, and it's frustrating because all the innovations, air quotes, you can't see my hands, but that was the biggest air quotes ever, innovations that they've been doing are what everyone has known. I'm assuming almost every competent Pokemon fan has been like, you've got to go open world with this, you've got to change up what's happening. And they needed to have done this, like, what are we on? This is Gen 9, right? So they needed to have done
this, like Gen
4 generations
six.
Ago.
Yeah.
At least. And so I guess it makes you just not feel listened to. You're like, okay, is Pokemon Incorporated or whatever just a team of Slowbro? Like, are they just now receiving the information from 2 to 4 gens ago?
Yeah.
And they... Yeah. Anyway, before I have an aneurysm, I'm going to just see if we can change the topic here.
So what's... what are good stories that you found in video games? Like a game where you just think it is the piece de resistance of, this was a perfect combination of story and gameplay, and this was just everything that I wanted in a video game experience.
Ooh, that is a very hard question to answer. There are quite a few games that come to mind. And to me, the way that I gauge it is I look at the final boss. I say, when the final boss came, did I feel the weight of everything I had done up to that point? And was the fight fulfilling? And I felt like I smashed it. Like, I beat everything you needed me to do, and I kicked your teeth in, and I felt great about it.
Yeah, you were you were happy to beat the final boss for the purpose of, you wanted the story to be completed. You felt, you know, excitement because you're like, yes, all of these story elements have been leading me to this point.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say, I don't know if my favorite final bosses would be in this, because a lot of my favorite final bosses are not in completely story-driven games.
Yeah.
But I guess I'd say, based on story alone, Twilight Princess.
Okay.
The gameplay of the final boss was interesting, but the way it just built and built and built and built, and then you finally got to just take down Ganondorf. Man, it was very special. That said, it's quite reminiscent of Ocarina of Time as far as the way that the games play out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that executed story and gameplay quite well. I will also say that... I'll go with the Force Unleashed series. Didn't know where to put Force Unleashed, but you really do just feel like you become this overpowered force monster throughout the series.
Yeah.
And then right at the end, I don't know, it fulfills, it's like that wish fulfillment pretty well. Every kid wants to be a Jedi and pull a Star Destroyer out of the sky, and Force Unleashed just says, you know what, we can do this. And so, while the gameplay got slightly repetitive right near the end, to me, it was also a good way to kind of tie in the gameplay and the story and kind of just bring you to the edge of your seat.
I would
How
say
about
that,
you?
I definitely have a few. I would say that The Force Unleashed definitely falls into a category of the story is the main reason why you're playing it. The gameplay is not necessarily bad, but it's definitely secondary.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about last week how I'm not a huge fan of brawlers, and like I lose my immersion, especially in Force Unleashed, when I have to hit a stormtrooper 15 times with my lightsabers in order to kill him.
Mm-hmm. That did bug me as well.
I do think that the story in there is very, very good. The culminating moments of it, and feeling like your actions in the story led to something, especially in The Force Unleashed 2, when at the end you can choose to either, kill Darth Vader and become Palpatine's apprentice and go hunt down all of the characters from the original trilogy where you fight Obi-Wan Kenobi and you basically destroy the rebellion before it even starts, or you sacrifice yourself and your sacrifice is what drives the start of the rebellion.
Exactly. You save, what was it, Leia and the others.
Organa, Bail Organa, he's involved with that. I think
that's
been a while. I feel like, not only was the story leading up to that point very compelling, the decision that I made, it shows, why did I make this decision? And no matter which one I choose, I'm very happy with what I did because, I either feel good that I started the rebellion and, being a huge Star Wars fan, I'm like, yay, the original trilogy can happen. And it feels very, very good starting the rebellion, or I choose to become Palpatine's apprentice. And then I get to live out this whole twisted fantasy of, yes, let me go be this overpowered murder machine and kill all these characters.
Yes. man, good times.
So Force Unleashed, it is a great example of that for me. I think there's a lot of Zelda games that are great. I think Hollow Knight is the most recent and relevant one for me. Mm-hmm. Because there's multiple endings depending on your level of completion.
Yeah.
And so I think that, if you go through the whole story, you discover everything and you get to a point where you get to fight the Radiance, who's like in the background, the main reason why everything's happened in Hollow Knight. And
yeah,
the way that you defeat it and it being a very challenging fight. And so it's rewarding on a gameplay element, it's rewarding on a story element. I think that is a great way to do it. And I think that really stands out to me.
Yeah. My one gripe with Hollow Knight is that there's no way you can get there without the internet helping you. But yeah. It really does test your skill. And I guess it's similar to the Dark Souls type games where the difficulty level gives you so much payoff for when you finally win.
Yeah. And I think for me, while the difficulty level in the gameplay is certainly a large aspect of, my heart's racing, I've got adrenaline pumping because I've never gotten this far on the boss and I know that we're getting near the final, the last stage and just want to end it. The story elements behind it and understanding the story of Hollow Knight and, the knight, the player character's shade,
figuring that out yourself.
Yeah, killing the Radiance and... the Hollow Knight shade helping, and there's just a lot of narrative victory behind that, and understanding the weight of that action is huge. So I think it's a good marriage between gameplay satisfaction and narrative satisfaction.
I can agree with that. Yeah, definitely is a just fantastic game, and I know it's become more popular as of late, and it's been out for a good long while now, but everyone is just praying that Silk Song comes along someday.
It's supposed to within the next year.
I'm always skeptical.
This is a whole another side tangent, but Xbox in the summer, they did a series where they talked about upcoming day one releases for the Xbox Game Pass that are coming out within the next year. And Silk Song was in that. So Silk Song is guaranteed coming out by summer of 2023.
Okay. Whew.
The wait is over.
Yeah. Over being like a year from now, but you know, I'll take what I can get.
When it's going to come out is over.
I agree. Yeah. Okay, well, don't be offended if your favorite games weren't mentioned here today.
Definitely.
Tyler and I are only two people. We can't have played every game, especially since we have jobs and life and all that kind of stuff. But I like to think that we have a pretty good grasp of what makes a good story, but we'd love to connect with you guys about anything else that we missed or that you think is also important. So Tyler has all the plugs for us, but yeah, pretty much reach out to us however you want to, you know, get your
definitely
point across.
Definitely. I mean, you know, Nathan and I, we play a lot of games, but we haven't played them all. If you have any, you know, recommendations of games that have great stories or elements that make a great story for you, let us know. You know, connect with us on Twitter at @plusminusgamers or shoot us an email at plusminusgamerspod@gmail.com. We've enjoyed interacting with the community this past week since episode one came out. Appreciate all the votes on the polls. I don't know if Nathan was aware of this, but we put out a poll. The general consensus of favorite genre based off of last week's podcast was RPGs. That was the most, highest voted genre.
Good choice.
Thanks everyone for participating. You know, please continue to connect with us again at @plusminusgamers on Twitter or reach us at @plusminusgamerspod@gmail.com. Until then, we'll chat with y'all through that over the course of this week, and we'll connect next week on our next topic.
All right. You guys take it easy.